accession number 12168, rule 2.
Mr. Simpson, reel 2. You said that you embarked at Southampton.
That's right. And spent the night on board a ship. I suppose it was a TS tank carrying vessel, a TCV, and we were taken down into the hold. This was on the either 4th or 5th of June, and it sailed sometime during the night. We didn't get a lot of sleep because of noise and various lot of people crammed in together, although we did stretch out where we could on tables and on the deck, and got what sleep we could. And it seems as though it went all through the day, and the sea was pretty rough. I don't know what time it sailed, but the sea was rather rough. And then on the morning of the 6th, there was a sound of heavy firing. Women told not to go on deck, but of course we had a look out when we could, and we could see the battleships in the background, and they were firing over the top of us. It sounded like express trains going over every couple of minutes or so, and then loud explosions on the shore at about 9 o'clock in the morning. We were told to get up and get ready and go on deck, and we followed a sailor with a rope from the ship to the shore into about 3 feet of water, 3 to 4 feet of water, and the shore was 20-30 yards away. When he got on shore and took the boats off to empty the water out and tried to get rid of as much water as we could, we had full pack on, of course, and it was rather uncomfortable. The sun came out and it was blazing hot, and we felt very uncomfortable indeed. We went across the sand and into a sunken railway line, and it was there I first saw the dead German. There were two or three of them on by the side of the railway line, and of course we couldn't do anything about them at that time, so we went past them and went into a village can't just remember its name. Benius Summer, I think it was Benius Summer. And we got in the shelter of a very stout stone wall and waited for orders. So the officers went off down to the beach dressing stations. There were various dressing stations on the beach, and we went asked, they went and asked if we could give any assistance, of course, and naturally we went down onto the beach. There was a few odd fusillades of shots over the top, but nothing came near us that I can remember. And we helped with the wounded on the beach, and they were evacuated to ships that were leaving, go back to England. During the night of the day, we went into some slit trenches that the Germans had dug, And we should have known better, because the German planes came over and strafed them practically all night long. Fortunately, there was only two of our unit that was injured, and they were really bad wounds. And then they dropped fire bombs, and the place was lit up. After that particular night, we went to set up whatever we could of a dressing station, but our main gear had not arrived, our tented gear had not arrived, it being held up somewhere, and we went to another unit which had got their stuff ashore and helped them with the casualties. 2 or 3 days of this elapsed, and there was a pump where people could get water, but every time anybody of a rank went near it or approached it, there was a sniper on the tower of the church shooting down, until eventually they decided that they had enough of this fellow up there, or maybe 2 or 3 of them, and they brought out a mortar and mortared the church tower. Otherwise it would have been left intact, but they wouldn't come down, they wouldn't surrender, and they just blew them to pieces from the top of this church tower.
Yeah. Just let me go back to D-Day. Were you attached to a division?
Yeah, we were attached to the 1st Canadian Army, with the 1st Canadian Army.
But not to a specific division?
Well, we were in the 49th Division. We were still in 49th Division.
And do you know the name of the beach that you landed at?
It was Benias somewhere, but whatever. I think it was Sword Beach. I'm not sure about that. We were never told anything, of course.
Sorry, I interrupted you with you saying about the sniper being dealt with. Can you take it on from there?
Ah, well, after that was over, there was very little firing, and we moved on further up into the town, or out of the town, out of Benias somewhere, onto a road, and set up eventually our tents, and hospital gear arrived from, and we set up a hospital on the other side of a road, and put out a great big Red Cross with the Union Jack, and there was very little enemy activity as far as we were concerned. There was a lot in the vicinity, but when the planes saw this Red Cross symbol, most of them lifted up their guns and flew over and didn't strafe us. Another one or two had a go, but there weren't many of them. And it was not uneventful, but not really scarifying. We stayed there on that beach until we moved further inland to a place called La Deliverande, and moved up the whole gear with the hospital. Before we went to La Deliverande, there was a bit of a scare, because we'd set up tents in a field, given the map reference by somebody or other, I don't know what it was, but given us a map reference, we set up tents in this field, and when we got it all fixed up and ready to take wounded in, We were told that some German tanks were coming down the road, and they actually passed within a few yards of us on this road, and we drew lots to see who should stay behind with the few wounded that we collected on the way. But the tanks went down the road and veered off into a wood. A bit later on in the day, some of our rocket firing planes, the first that I'd ever seen, flew over and blasting them out of this wood. And that ended that scare, so we all got back and went on our way to La Deliverand and set up a hospital there that was bulldozed out of the ground, a big cavity was dug into the ground by bulldozers. The hole was then levelled off, and we put up the tents in this big hole, the main tents for the hospital, marquees as such, and we put up the marquees in this hole in the ground, and we've been there 2 or 3 days taking casualties in when it started to rain, and it rained and it rained and it rained. We got flooded out to evacuate that and go on to the ground above. Then we put up the canvas in a better place and stayed there for some time until the advance into just outside Caen. The advance Caen, and we were just on the brow of the hill overlooking Caen when the 500 bombery came over, and before that all the guns of the infantry had been lined up and shelled Caen for 2 or 3 hours, and then the bombers came over about 9 o'clock at night, flew very low over Caen on an even keel, probably only about 300 or 400 feet up, and bombed Caen until there was no further resistance, practically, or no reasonable resistance anywhere. We took many casualties, both Germans and British, from Caen, of course, and treated them. Most of them were evacuated down to the General Hospital, which was further down the road. And by the way, it was the 30th General Hospital, the one that I'd been serving with before. So I actually went down to see 2 or 3 of my pals, and they were at Bayeux.
Did you treat Germans and British indiscriminately?
Oh yeah, yes, there was no difference.
No favouritism?
No, I never kept separate, of course, as far as it was possible to do it, but if they were badly wounded, and nobody cared whether the German, British, what they were, wounded soldiers.
Did you have psychological casualties?
No.
Did you have psychological casualties?
Well, we had quite a lot that came from the 51st Island Division, but they weren't psychological, but an aerial, and they'd been out east and sent straight over to this country, still suffering from malaria, and we had a lot of those in at that time, and we had to hospitalise them.
Could you do anything for them?
Only medication.
But did you have shell-shocked people?
Oh yes, 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 yes. Quite a lot of Germans were shell-shocked. Yeah. And of course one or two British, yes.
What symptoms would they show?
Oh, shaking and weeping and general debility.
What did you do for them?
They were put to bed and medicated, and eventually they, if they didn't recover, they were sent back, evacuated to a general hospital, eventually sent back to England.
Did you get people who you thought were dodging the column?
Well, not that I know of, but it wasn't my job to say whether they were dodging or not, but at that time I was put in charge of evacuations as such. My job was to get all the people whose dressings were on the wounds, put them on stretchers, and summon up whatever ambulances. We had an RSC ambulance unit attached to us. Summon up whatever ambulances we want to take them to the either the general hospital, or to be flown straight back to either flown or on the boat straight back to England. And my job was to look after them and say that they were comfortable before they were put on into the ambulances.
Did you treat Norman civilians as well?
Yes, we had a few civilians, particularly one girl who had lost an arm. And because I was rather old at the time for a soldier, I was the only one that she would let touch her when she wanted the toilet or anything like that. It was me that had to go.
So you had to clean her?
Yes, well, she didn't like these young fellows. She was a very pretty young thing, about 17 or 18 years of age. And she'd had an arm blown up. Anyway, she was just one of them. There was quite a few that we treated, civilians, and not the right lot, maybe a dozen or so.
What did the attitude of the Normandy civilians seem to be towards the Allied troops?
Oh, well, they were very relieved to see us. Yeah. They welcomed us with open arms. Yeah, very relieved.
So you didn't come across hostility from them?
Oh, no, not at all. Nowhere. Nowhere all in Normandy, in France, or anywhere.
What impression did you get of the German troops?
Well, most of them have been demoralised with the bombing and shelling and been subjected to, and they didn't stand up well to it. They were rather woebegone and sorry for themselves, although you did get some of the arrogant Nazi youth who tried to whip up bad feeling, but the majority of them were docile.
Now, I interrupted your narrative, if you can take it on from the bombing of Caen.
Ah, well, then of course there was the Falaise Gap, and the most casualties we got from the Falaise Gap was from the American bombers, who went overhead and bombed the Polish tanks in the run-up to when they were advancing up to the Rhine, not the Rhine, the Seine, That was the biggest batch of casualties that we got, was the Polish troops who were being bombed by the American bombers, because they bombed from thousands of feet up. And of course, they didn't distinguish. It was like this one that you read about in the papers today, about this bombing in Iraq, you know, when the British soldiers caught it. Well, the Polish soldiers caught it far, far much more than they ever did.
Were there dozens of Polish casualties?
There was quite a lot, probably a couple of hundred, yes.
Did they seem to be bitter about it?
Very. Very bitter towards the Americans, yes.
What did they say to you?
Well, they didn't say a lot because most of them couldn't speak much English, but what they implied was that if they got the Americans, they'd shoot them. Just an implication, not an actual threat, I suppose. I was with, when we moved on from there, we went across towards Rouen, and I was in the last, I knew it was Rouen afterwards, but at that time we didn't know where we were going, we just went on the road, and I was with the last two trucks with the bedding and whatever have you, and a few personnel in the back, and the truck that I was in broke down, and the truck behind it stopped to give assistance, and we're about 2 hours before we got started again. A dispatch rider came back to see what we were doing and why it stopped, and he said, you go straight up the road. He said, you'll find the rest of the unit up the road. Went straight up the road till we got to the bridge at Rouen, not seeing any of our unit at all. Plenty of other trucks were around, but not our unit. And we got to the bridge at Rouen and stopped there and asked the control at the bridge, the military police, where our unit, our MC unit had gone, so they said, cross the bridge and straight up the road. And went these trucks straight up the road for mile after mile after mile until we decided that into country like North Yorkshire Moors, until we decided we'd gone much too far, and we turned round and came back again. I got back to Rouen itself and saw no Germans, no activity of any kind, and got back to Rouen itself and asked again at the checkpoint that we'd gone over in the first place where they were, and they said they hadn't a clue. So they pointed out to headquarters a building where all the general officers and unit commanders were gathered for a lecture by General Crudder. I went in there and to see if I could find out where my unit was. I went in there and they said, sorry, we don't know. There was a major on the door, and he said, sorry, I don't know anything about it. He said, but I'll have a word with the general, He'd evidently stopped speaking for the time. He said, I'll have a word with the general and see if he can find what you want to know. General Crerar stood up and said to the assembled gathering, he said, there's a sergeant here with the two trucks and he wants to know where his unit is. He's lost them. Could anybody tell me where the 32nd Field Casualty Clearing Station is? There was a deathly hush. Nobody knew. And so eventually one Lieutenant Colonel spoke up. He said, excuse me, sir, he said, but you can have the map reference of my unit, which was the 146 Field Ambulance. He said, have the reference on my unit. And he said, if he makes for there, he said, we'll get a signal to tell them where eventually the 32nd General Hospital, 32nd Casualty Clearance Station, setting up their headquarters. So I got this map reference from this colonel and went there. And when I got there, it was on the banks of the river. And then to got there, got any signal at that time, but he told me to go in and have a meal and take all the rest of them, have a meal, and we'd been out all day, of course, and have a meal, and as soon as I got the reference, they'd let me know, and we could proceed with the trucks. Eventually, about 8 o'clock in the evening, it came through, and they said there are two ways to go. One is follow the river and then turn right at the first bridge and go up the hill to the top of the hill, turn right and come down again. And they said, you'll find them on the side of the road there, and give me the map reference. And he said, but there's another way, and that's to go back where you've come, which is about 30 miles to back to Rouen. Well, I said, that's a long way, and it's late at night. It's late at night by the time we get, you know, going that way. So I said, yes, I agree with you. He said, all right, go that way. So we went up that way and went up the hill to a town, the player of Wheelie football, what they call it. Can't remember the name of it. Anyway, went up that way, and then the people came out and started waving and cheering. And I thought, this is queer. So we turned right on the road that we'd been taught to go down. And about a mile further on, there were some shots fired. And we stopped, of course. And they were fired over the top of us. But we stopped, and then an officer came out from the ditch down below with his revolver. Where have you come from? Where are you going? So when we told him where we'd come from and where we were going, oh, he said, all right, carry on. He said, well, we're just going to take that town up there. I said, well, there's no Germans there, evidently, because we've just come through and nobody's stopped us. So you're all right, you can walk in. And we eventually came back to our unit about 11 o'clock at night. And that to unload all the gear then at 11 o'clock at night. We stayed there for some time at this particular place, and then went to, where do we go from there? Okay. Just stop it a minute.
Did you see anything of the French handling of collaborators?
No.